From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Glowing lanterns, ornate rugs, these props set the scene when the lights come up on the theater project's reimagined staging of a 300-year-old opera by Handel. The Tale of Xerxes takes this classic work, set in the Persian Empire, and dials up the volume on its Persianness, blending in calligraphy and poetry by the 13th-century philosopher Rumi. Director Timothy Nelson describes the process of modernizing an opera, and artist Parinaz Bahadori describes the power of Rumi to bring Americans and Iranians together.
They share the same aspirations, the same dreams, the same ups and downs in their lives, the same, you know, wanting the best for their family. We're just not that different. And I feel like Rumi can be the thing that brings us together.
It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Unless you're a fan, opera may live in your mind as brawny men and buxom women in elaborate costumes singing with vibrato powerful enough to break glass. In fairness, that would describe some operas. But a new production of George Friedrich Handel's The Tale of Xerxes takes a different approach. The opera is coming to the Baltimore Theater Project June 14th through the 16th. Let's set the stage. The year is 470 BC in Abydos, a city occupied by the all-powerful Persian Empire. This is a story about love, hate, betrayal, and above all, it is a roller coaster ride of miscommunication. Timothy Nelson is the artistic director, writer, stage director, and music director of The Tale of Xerxes. He's also a graduate of Peabody Conservatory. Timothy, thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure, Sheila.
What is The Tale of Xerxes?
So The Tale of Xerxes is my version of Handel's opera, which is simply called Xerxes, which he wrote in 1737.
And what's the storyline?
So you gave maybe the best synopsis of it I've ever heard. It's a very complicated story of two sisters that love one of a pair of brothers. The other brother loves one of these sisters, so it's two brothers dueling over a sister, and there's lots of mistaken identities and intrigue, and all is made right in the end. It's a very typical 18th century, what we call opera seria.
Is it a comedy?
Ostensibly, it's a comedy. It's Handel's only comedy. So what happened is Handel was producing Italian opera in London and very popular. He was an impresario. He owned a theater, making a lot of money. And in 1727, a composer named John Gay produced something called The Beggar's Opera. And it was in English, and it had spoken text. It was bawdy. It was very much what we would consider musical comedy today. It was about low-life British characters. And it was wildly popular. And people stopped going to Italian opera. And in the 10 years between 1727 and 1737, Handel went bankrupt. The theaters emptied out. And he was trying to find a way to revive opera. And what he did was take an old libretto, deconstruct it, reconstruct it, and make this piece called Xerxes, which was his attempt to write a comedy, and try to figure out how to make opera speak to audiences of his day, to contemporary audiences.
Did he write this one in English or in Italian?
It is in Italian, but if you know Baroque opera at all, this opera has a totally different form. The arias are quite short. It goes seamlessly from ariosos into recitative and back again. And it has a special character who we think was probably originally played by an actor because his music is so simple. And for this production, what we've done is turn that actor back into an actor and given him a spoken narration. So our piece, whereas Handel's piece is about 3.5 hours, our piece is 90 minutes without an intermission and is narrated by this spoken character.
This opera is about a Persian king. How much did that setting influence Handel's original production?
Not at all. Handel picked subjects because they were exotic, but he would have known nothing about Persia. He would have known that there was a king named Xerxes I. He would have known that, according to legend, Xerxes loved the plane tree, a certain tree, type of tree in ancient Persia. And he would have known about the famous pontoon bridge that Xerxes built across the Hellespont. Other than that, he would have known nothing. And there's nothing Persian in the piece. And one of the joys of this project was to try and insert to what I've been calling culturally reappropriate the piece and to insert Persianness into the piece, to find the Persian in the piece.
I want to talk more about that, but let me ask you, why did you choose to put on this opera?
I didn't. I was commissioned to create this piece 2 years ago for Baldwin Wallace Conservatory, which is in Cleveland. And they called and they asked me to do Xerxes. Xerxes is the one Handel opera I never wanted to do. And I wrote back and said, how about Alcina? They said Xerxes. I said Ariadante. They said Xerxes. And we went back and forth. And eventually they said Xerxes, but you can do anything you want with it. And that interested me. And I liked the challenge of taking a piece that I didn't respond to and find something into it that would make me love it. And indeed, it's become the project I've made in the last 20 years that's most special to me.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Timothy Nelson, the director of The Tale of Xerxes. The show is coming to the Baltimore Theater Project a week from Friday. As you've already intimated, this production is very different from traditional opera. The singing in your production is in English, and you've intertwined poetry throughout. I'd like the listeners to hear a bit. Would you set up the clip we're about to hear?
Sure. This is the end of the opera. The spoken voice you'll hear is a character that in the original is called Elviro, but for us we just call him the poet, and he's in a way an amalgamation of Handel's character and the great Persian poet Rumi, which many of your listeners probably know. The entire narration of the opera is created out of the poetry of Rumi. And in this piece, all the wrong of the past 90 minutes has been made right. What always happens in a Handel opera is at some moment someone finally says, I was wrong, and someone else says, it's okay, I still love you. And this is just after that moment when all has been made right again.
Okay, let's listen.
Spring, the only fair judge, walks in the courtroom and several December thieves steal away. Last year's miracles, our last year's miracles,
so part of what we heard there was translation of the poetry of Rumi. How did you get plugged into Rumi?
It was the thing most salient, maybe the only other Persian thing I knew. When I decided I wanted to do, or I had to do Xerxes, the thing I responded to immediately was, okay, this is about a Persian history. And what I've always loved about Persian culture stems from its poetry, and particularly from Rumi. And he's been very important in my personal life, and I wanted to now make a piece that honored that and celebrated that.
And so as you pursued that, how did you get more wise about Rumi?
Well, so I turned originally to the translations, which are most widely available in America, by a man named Coleman Barks, and they're beautiful poetic translations. And by poetic translations, he himself doesn't read or speak Persian. He has these translated for him literally, and then he writes a poetic version of it. And they're the words we use for this script. But then we also contacted the chair of the Persian Studies Department at University of Maryland, which is Fatemeh Keshavarz, who is, I would say, the world's great Rumi scholar. She has a wonderful podcast called Radio Rumi, and she was very generous and just opened her knowledge and her heart to this project, and has really been instrumental in keeping us on the straight and narrow about being near the soul of Rumi.
Well, how well do the themes of Rumi's poetry fit in with the Tale of Xerxes?
Well, this is, on the surface, one would think not. And in point of fact, what Handel's always interested in, what every Handel opera is about, is the idea that somebody can be made new again, that they can do wrong things and then they can make that right. And actually, Rumi uses the metaphor of devastation of the heart as a necessary process for being made whole and for being poured anew with greater amounts of love. So actually what both pieces about, but both men are obsessed with, is the idea of us having more room in our souls for love. And very much that's what The Tale of Xerxes is about.
Have you kept the music as Handel composed it?
The music is largely as Handel composed it. It's less of the music, so because our piece is only about 90 minutes. We're performing it with a baroque orchestra, which means players that play on historically informed instruments and with a historically informed style. And sometimes we've adapted some of the scales to reflect the modalities of Persia a bit, but largely the music's the same. I've made my own translation of the original Italian into English in a translation that tries to replicate as best as I'm able with my skills Rumi's colorings, the sound world of Rumi. So many of the metaphors in the sung text are the same that Rumi uses in the spoken text.
You've made several references to the history of it, and of course we've been in this whole conversation referring to Persia, a historical concept. The name Iran has not yet entered this conversation, but you worked with the Iranian American Community Center in Vienna, Virginia, to connect with a calligraphy artist, and we'll meet her in a few minutes. What are you doing to familiarize your actors with Persian culture?
So when I decided to program this piece about 10 months ago, my first priority was to find a way to have an authentic voice, a more authentic voice in it. And I contacted the Iranian American Community Center and was linked into the curator of their art program. And that's Parinaz Bahadori. And she's been instrumental in creating not only the visual set for the piece, but also in connecting us with other resources in the community. And for instance, our first rehearsal, we began with grounding the cast by having a Sufi whirler come in and taught the entire cast how to do the whirling dervish. Ooh. Which during the production we'll do a stylized version of it, but I wanted the cast to have the experience of doing the real thing and understanding the real thing. And then she also led us through a series of gestures and prayer stances that we use as a vocabulary throughout the piece to give it a sort of a physical authenticity.
We need to take a short break here on The Record on WIPR. We're speaking with Timothy Nelson about the opera The Tale of Xersei, coming to the Baltimore Theater Project a week from Friday. When we come back, mesmerizing calligraphy will illuminate the stage. We hear from the opera's scenic painter about heightening the elements of Persian culture. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Glowing lanterns, plush cushions, ornate rugs. These props set the stage when the lights come up on a new production of George Friedrich Handel's 18th century Italian opera, Xersei. Also woven throughout this reimagined production is the poetry of Rumi, a beloved 13th century philosopher of the Persian Empire. The opera's director, Timothy Nelson, an alum of the Peabody Conservatory, is here with us. And joining us now is Parinaz Bahadori, curator of art for the Iranian American Cultural Center in Vienna, Virginia, and the scenic painter and calligrapher for The Tale of Xersei. Parinaz, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You are a skilled calligrapher. What role does calligraphy play in the scenery of this opera?
So when Timothy approached me about working on this project, he talked about this plane tree, which, of course, is one of the most famous arias in Handel's work as well, probably the one that I recognize and many of your listeners maybe know as well. And he talked about a tree that he had used in the earlier production that had taken place in Cleveland, about a tree in the middle of the scene. But he wanted me to have calligraphy kind of adorn, kind of act as a surround in the space. But he didn't really give me too much more direction. And really, I appreciate the fact that he just said, I would like some poetry of Rumi to be hanging around this tree. And so I'm not a Rumi expert at all. We all grew up with poetry in Iran, and I love to do calligraphy. But I started to look at the shapes of the letters that are often used in Rumi's poetry, words that come up over and over again, almost sometimes in a kind of a hypnotic, mesmerizing way. Some words may appear maybe 10 times in a stanza. You know, the sort of repetitive word that goes on and on, like the word John, which means soul. So it may come up at the end of every single line and it becomes kind of hypnotic. So I took that word, for example, and thought of it almost as the branches of the tree, but did it as a kind of a negative positive where the light would go through the back of these panels, these canvases, and appear as leaves on the tree. These paint marks would, when they're lit from the back, look like leaves. And then on the front, when the paint is lit from the front, these canvases would be like tiles that have calligraphic words on them.
So I'm trying to picture this, and I'm not succeeding very well. So it's a screen. It's a semi-transparent.
It's actually canvases. Imagine, you know, various sized canvases, but it was a very thin linen. Normally you have like a gessoed linen. This was a raw linen. And but I realized when I had it in my studio with the light going through it, it was this kind of magical thing going on when I would put the brush stroke, the light going through it. I decided, well, you know, scenery is all about that darkness and light. So we can light it from the front and light it from the back. When you light it from the front, the paint is more solid. When you light it from the back, the letters, which I kind of peeled them off so that the letters are actually voids on the canvas. It was like a stencil.
I think part of what might help me picture this is if you spoke a bit about calligraphy being art, not just cursive writing.
Yes, exactly. So in the Iranian tradition in Persia and now current day Iran, calligraphy has been a way. First, poetry was orally in families' homes, has always been passed down. You know, families will use poetry very regularly. But then when the Arabic alphabet entered the Persian Empire in the 7th century, the Arabic alphabet was used, more or less, with four extra letters. And then there was actually a unique Persian script that came to be, and all the books of poetry were written in this Nasadir script. And so many Iranians have, you know, books of the works of Hafez and Sa'di and Rumi and all the you know, the Shahnameh of Ferdowsi. All these books are in basically calligraphic script. And actually calligraphy, if you go to any, you know, Islamic collection or Persian collection of art, calligraphy appears on pottery, on metalwork, you know, on the walls of mosques, on the doorways of schools, you know, a little poem here and there. So poetry and calligraphy are very intertwined. Poetry is a big part of the culture, a way of kind of, you know, metaphorically addressing problems or sadness or happiness. It's just often used at the dinner table. Someone might just spout poetry. And someone may have a piece of calligraphy on the wall of their house as a reminder of certain words that they value. So calligraphers have been much revered. And it's a skill that all school children have to learn.
But for your audience, it will work as art for them, even though they cannot penetrate the words.
Exactly. The words are just the beauty of the form is probably going to be hanging up there. And then the magic will happen when the word is lit from the front and then lit from the back where the light goes through the word. So basically, I painted the panels with these letters, and then I peeled the letters off. I made kind of my own makeshift large, very large stencils. And when I peeled off the letter, then the light can go through that raw canvas. So at sometimes the audience will see these as almost branches in the tree because the words are very sinuous. The calligraphic script in Persian, in particular, the Kufic script of Arabic is a little bit more rectilinear. The Nasali, which is unique to Iran, is a little bit more curvy. There's, you know, many different scripts in the Arabic alphabet, but this one is particularly had a very organic feel to it. So,
Timothy Nelson, what was the biggest challenge in mixing Iranian art and poetry with an Italian opera written in Italian by a German-born composer?
The connection between the two actually came out organically. I would say making it the most difficult thing was to decide we're going to do this in the language of the audience. So we're going to translate this Italian libretto into English, but I'm going to try to do it in a way that sounds like Rumi, has the rhyme scheme of the original Italian, and tells the story the way I want to tell it for this particular production. That took countless hours with looking at the Italian text and trying out English words that would rhyme in the same way and would sound like a poem of Rumi. And I'm certainly not a poet on the caliber of Rumi. So it's quite humbling also to say, okay, I'm going to try to write something that can stand next to Rumi that isn't Rumi.
Parinaz, how important is Rumi to Persian culture, to Iranian culture?
Very important. You know, it's interesting. Everybody kind of wants to say that Rumi is part of their culture from the Afghanis where he was born. You know, back then the Persian Empire extended into Afghanistan, and then he died in current-day Turkey. But he did write in Persian, so in a way, Iranians feel like it's still a language that's spoken very much. You know, I can even read it and understand it, even though, you know, it was written, you know, hundreds of years ago, back in the, you know, 13th century. So it's still a very accessible language. And he doesn't write in a very complicated way. The ideas are very complex, but the words he uses are not overly complicated. And I think he and Saadi, the two contemporaries in the 13th century, were very mystical. And so it speaks to people today very much so, as it does to Americans, the translations. But Iranians today very much will have a copy of his work. And he's used in a lot of Persian traditional music. People will recite or sing his words into Persian traditional music as well today, very much so. It's a, you know, continuing practice.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with scenic painter and calligrapher Parnaz Bahadori about the upcoming production of the opera The Tale of Xersei. Also with us is director Timothy Nelson. Sort of in the same way that the enormously popular Broadway musical Hamilton incorporates rap, this production of The Tale of Xersei breaks with convention. It's been translated from Italian to English. Have you gotten any pushback from opera traditionalists?
None, actually. It's Baroque opera, of course, isn't Puccini, so there isn't sort of the cult of the 19th century around it. So people are already prepared to think of it more flexibly. It's an art form that's already known to be to need some help because it's, you know, it's a 3.5-hour opera. There's a lot of repetitive arias. People sort of want to see something done with Baroque opera. And Rumi has a way of being like a refiner's fire or a purifier. I mean, the fact that you're putting Rumi with it, almost people open up and want to accept that.
Well, that raises the question, does making opera interesting for today's audiences require that much of an overhaul?
I think so. And the way I always think about it is the way we produce opera today, it looks very similar to what it would have looked like in the 1880s, the 1870s even, the way Verdi wrote opera. That's still, when we close our eyes, the picture we see when we hear the word opera is very much that experience. Whereas if we were to still try to cultivate theater audiences to close their eyes and imagine what Sarah Bernhardt's theater world looked like when we say the word theater, that would be preposterous.
Parnaz, what does it mean to you as someone born in Iran who visits Iran? What does this production mean in that context?
You know, I think there's so much more that binds us and separates us as humans. And I think the fact that Rumi is one of the most popular poets in America, from what I hear, just is testimony to the fact that the words of one culture can really be heard by another and will speak to people in another culture. At the end, all of our, you know, the concepts of love and sadness and pain and, you know, any issue that we all face is universal. And to me, the fact that I can straddle both languages and both cultures, you know, both of them are just as important to me. They're interwoven into my being. And I think ultimately we are a lot more connected. Iranians are not, you know, that different from Americans. We've had some political strife between the two, but the people are similar. They share the same aspirations, the same dreams, the same ups and downs in their lives, the same, you know, wanting the best for their family. We're just not that different. And I feel like Rumi can be, and I just really appreciate the fact that Rumi can be maybe the thing that brings us together. You know, the tale of Xerxes, obviously, or Xerxes, you say we call him Xerxes or Hashayar. You know, nobody really knows that much about what was going on in his court, so it's really just an excuse to kind of get into Iran. But Rumi maybe brings it to a level of, you know, like what spiritually binds us all together.
Timothy Nelson, how would you summarize the importance of this production or the impact you hope it will have?
There's different levels for that. One is to do with proving that opera can be truly explorative and can be new. There's the message that Rumi teaches of having to lean into life, lean into pain in order to make ourselves better and more capable of love. And then there's also, we've been going back and forth in the conversation between Persian, Iran, but it's easy it's easy to forget that this world we're talking about that gave us Rumi is Iran and is connected to the modern day Iran. And I think particularly with the conversations that are in the body politic right now, it's really important for us to have examples of other ways of connecting with our fellow human beings from that part of the world.
A lot to think about. Thank you both for this conversation. Thanks.
Thank you, Sheila.
The Tale of Xerxes will be playing at the Baltimore Theater Project on June 14th, 15th, and 16th. We've got details at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Timothy Nelson is writer and director of The Tale of Xerxes. Parinaz Bahadori is the opera's scenic painter and calligrapher and director of art programs at the Iranian American Community Center in Vienna, Virginia. On the Record's director and engineer is Nathan Sterner. Maureen Harvey and Melissa Gear produced the program. John Ahrens wrote and recorded the On the Record theme music. Special thanks to On the Record intern Tara Zarfashan. I'm your host, Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.